Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. The Donald on a Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888. On Alana Kitchen, my name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prusgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. I hope everyone is enjoying summer, although things are a bit dusty and cloudy, evidently.
And dry.
The West Coast. Let's complain.
Yeah,
oh, my goodness. What? We have lots of things to talk about.
There's particulate matter in the air. I have noticed. Have you noticed that? Well, this was worse before we got this tiny rain, but this black, greasy stuff kind of on leaves and...
Oh, no, huh?
Well, I just noticed it, that it felt like... When I was young and we would go to Central Park and everything looked green and beautiful, but when you look close, there was city smog coating everything, and it feels like that's what's going on around here.
Well, here it is in Iowa. Well, we do live on a rather small planet, folks. Remember that? Oh, dear.
Yes, those faraway fires are giving us particulate matter.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Itches the eyes.
Well, I have been enjoying summer anyway, because after a heat wave, we got a really nice...
That's true.
The nice wave.
The temperature has been... That's good. Good attitude.
Good attitude.
Temperatures are great right now.
Yes.
And actually, swimming is great right now, too.
Ooh, good. Good.
Yeah. Nice air temperatures, nice water temperatures.
I spent time in my garden kind of tidying up things. The first tomatoes are rolling in. Yes, they are.
Oh, hooray.
And I got, well, it's taken me a couple days, actually a couple of weeks. I started last week. All my onions are up and out of the ground. For those of you who may be growing onions for the first time, when onions grow, they start looking like an onion. You know, the bulb is underground and you got this green thing up top. And then they start drying down a little bit. That's kind of the time to pull them out of the ground. But when you do, and I've found this makes a difference, especially if you want to store them, when you pull them out of the ground or even before, you can break off, not break off, but break over the leaves that are sticking up. So the
green stalks, you just kind of, you don't break them off, huh?
Bruise them, kind of break them over. At the neck, so that they start drying and they don't keep growing.
Yes.
Even if you pull them out of the ground, that really helps them dry down a bit, and it helps the neck of the onion should dry down and get small, so the onion stores well. If that neck stays big and green and healthy, it opens itself to all kinds of nasty possibilities. So that's something I had to use.
A little grower's trick from Lana Noctigal.
Everybody has to learn about things about gardens, and I learned that about onions. You know,
now, how are you storing them? Are you tying them in bunches and hanging them, or
now,
what are you doing?
Right now, they are all out on my hay wagon in the shade, and as they dry down, in different varieties, I'm hanging them. I don't have that many onions this year, and they're small because of the weather. So I've got a big cattle panel fence kind of thing hanging inside of our red barn, and I kind of tie them up five in a bunch or four in a bunch.
And what varieties did we do this
year? Well, let's see. The first ones were Walla Wallas and
Sweet.
Yeah, and...
And those are not... preserving
no,
onions.
No. And also,
you got to eat those.
Yeah, and also I've got a pinkish one called Blush that is kind of early. But then I've got mid.
Now, is that that's not a storage either? Is that a sweet one also?
It's sweeter.
Sweet and juicy.
Yeah. Those are my two early ones, and then I kind of move into the later varieties, which are Candy, Copra, Red River, and Red Mars, and Tropias.
The Tropias. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, that's what's going on. Onions. You know, growing food for people is a pleasure. It's a challenge, and it's also a way to make a living. Today, We welcome Kate Sokol to our kitchen table. She is from Root to Rise Farm here in Ames, Iowa. You may know her from the farmer's market. She has a CSA. Welcome to our table, Kate.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So, Kate, your farm is a relatively new one to this area, and you've been going great guns. Tell us about what you do, and tell us about Root to Rise Farm.
Well, I've been farming for about 10 years, but mostly as farm crew, you know, learning how to farm on other farms. And last year, I started my own farm. We're located on the property of Alluvial Brewing and right next to Prairie Moon Winery. So some people might recognize those. I manage about 5.5 acres of certified organic land. This year we have about 2.5 acres in annual vegetables and about 0.5 acre in perennials. We grow food for the Ames area. We don't ship food anywhere. I rarely even sell food in Des Moines. I think it's really important to grow food for the people right around me.
Yeah, that's good. We can eat food here. That's good. Good.
Well, plus it's a beautiful setting out there at Alluvial. You're surrounded by quite a bit of prairie also, aren't you?
Yeah, we're surrounded on three sides by restored prairie and wetlands. One of the things that's really important to me is to find a way to grow food on the areas of land that can really handle the production and to respect the sensitive areas, the wetlands and things around me, and not produce food on those. So I'm really lucky to have those wetlands around me, have the diversity in wildlife and prairie plants, and to be able to grow on kind of the high stable spots around those areas.
Good. Well, you say you have 5.5 acres. That is not a overly small garden. That is a large garden. Who helps you? I hope we have help.
Yes, absolutely. My partner, Kyle Maxwell, helps me. He's fairly new to farming, but is embracing it fully.
Well, he's watched you do it for 10 years, right?
Yeah. And then I have a full-time intern from Iowa State, several part-time employees, and 6 work shares this year. So, those are members of my CSA that instead of paying for their food, come out and work once a week as a way to be connected more with where their food comes from.
Oh, that's great. Explain more about a CSA. Do you have, I assume that you train people that come out and do your stuff. Some people think that, farming, well, we'll just go out and have fun. There's a lot of skills there. So I'm sure you have lots to teach people. Tell us more about how the CSA works.
Yeah, so a CSA, CSA stands, it's an acronym. It stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And it's a way it's a way for farmers to connect with their community that's mutually beneficial, I think. The customers help share some of the risks and also the rewards of farming. They purchase shares, we call them, in the spring, and that income in the spring helps to buy seed, helps to buy fertilizer, helps to supply me as a farmer with the income or the input I need in the spring. And then for 20 weeks throughout the season, customers come and pick. We do market style, so they come and pick out each item, sometimes take more of things that they really enjoy or leave things for other members or to be donated that they wouldn't necessarily use. And yeah, so they come and pick up a box of veggies or a bag of veggies. And also we partner with a couple other local producers. So we do add-ons. We do a cheese add-on with Lost Lake cheese, and we do a bread add-on that is optional through Arcadia, through Liz at Arcadia.
Oh, that's great. So there's a lot you can get from your CSA. It's 5.5 acres. How many people are served by your CSA? How many people?
This year we have 52 members, in addition to working the farmer's market and hoping to take a fair amount of produce to the farmer's market.
Oh, good. I have a note here to talk about challenges and pleasures. And you mentioned that farmer's market is one of your pleasures. Talk about farmer's market.
Yes, I love farmer's market. I love working the farmer's market. To me, it's really, really important to connect with the consumer, to connect with the people who are eating the food, the families, the kids, so that they really know who's growing their food, so that they understand maybe how to use things that aren't familiar to them. And so they really understand, you know, some of the things, some of the struggles and the great, beautiful things that are happening on the farm. And farmers market and being present at CSA Pickup as well really helped me to do that. So I love waking up early and spending time making my display really pretty. And I love connecting with individual customers and giving them ideas about how they might use things or cook things that they're curious.
Good. You remembered the wake up early part. What are your Saturday mornings like? How early do you get up to load the truck, et cetera?
Well, I have to say, now that I'm working, I used to work the Des Moines Farmers Market, and now that I'm working the Ames Farmers Market, I have to get up a lot less early. But which is great. Early is good. Really early is 3 is a little excessive. So usually I get up about 5, I head out to the farm. This time of year, the first thing I do in the morning is harvest herbs. I always harvest my herbs the morning of market. I think it's really important for quality and flavor. And then I start loading things that were harvested the day before, a little more stable items that we harvested the day before, my little trailer, actually, my little Subaru, my little trailer, and haul them to market. And, I spend time making sure the tablecloth is straight and thinking about how things are organized on the table and where the colors are distributed and things like that. And then usually right about the time I'm writing price tags on the signs, they'll start showing up. So, yeah.
Well, your display at the market, this is the downtown Saturday morning Ames Farmers Market, is really, really lovely and always very attractive. In fact, it reminds me a little bit of what Lana used to do when she was doing the farmers market.
Yes, I used to do farmers market too, and I love everything about farmers market that you did, but the getting up early part, I never did get used to that at all. So it's lovely to be semi-retired, it's at least from the farmer's market sort of thing. Donna, I saw you at Root to Rise Farm farmer's market table, and you bought some herbs recently. She does good herbs.
I went out and looked at Kate's farm last week just because it's beautiful. And one of the more impressive things were your field, and it's a field, really, of your herbs. And you have a lot of them, and they are beautiful. And when you bring them to the market, they just look glorious. So tell us which herbs you're growing.
So I grow multiple varieties of most herbs, usually about 3 varieties of each herb. But this year we have sage, thyme, lemon thyme, leaf fennel, oregano, 6 different kinds of basil, chives, ooh, garlic cloves. I'm sure I'm forgetting things.
Did you say lavender too, right?
Rosemary and lavender, dill, dill and cilantro, you know, when I can keep it from flowering.
Well,
you can eat the flowers.
Yeah.
They are really good in salads. And also, actually, Lana and I were reading this thing about the seed of the cilantro before it dries and how it has its own unique flavor. Of course, that must be a little bit of a harvesting dilemma. There can't be that many of them, but...
They're actually pretty prolific, the fresh coriander. Yeah, I enjoy them. They're really tasty.
That's great.
Well, Lana and I want to try the fresh, not dried cilantro and or it's also called coriander seed.
Yeah.
If you harvest some of those.
See, it's always good to check the things on the internet every now and then, because there was this thing, yes, it's the seed that is supposed to be really something to cook with, and I always kind of gave up before and didn't bother. Well, let the plant go to seed, because it does self-seed quite well, but I'll grab some of that green stuff and use it.
So even when it bolts, you can use it.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably harder to market, but the sages, for example. So you have, tell me what varieties of sages you have.
The one that most people are familiar with, I believe, is called Common Gray.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a purple sage.
Oh.
And it's pretty. It tends to not overwinter here, though, so I don't grow too much of that. And then there's one called Burgotten, I believe. And it has a really large leaf that is very impressive at market and easier to chop, you know, because
are the flavors roughly the same with all three? It's just sage.
Yeah, I think the Common Gray and the Burgotten are very similar. I don't find the purple to be quite as strong flavored,
mm-hmm.
but there's a room in my heart for beautiful things that, you know, are 75% as tasty.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think your priorities are quite good. Are quite good there. Oh, along with pleasures and challenges, let's talk about a challenge here. Certifying a farm to be organic—that has got to be a challenge.
You know, there are some challenges with that. Yeah, a lot of it is training myself to keep good records. Because the records are really important, saving seed packets, saving invoices, making notes of what kind of fertilizers or compost and when I put them on, things like that. So the record keeping part is I would say the biggest challenge for me personally. I don't think that certifying would change any of my growing practices, but keeping those records so that I can verify those growing practices.
Because because people really do check, I hear. There really are certifiers. Oh, my goodness. Yes,
so
there are.
Who is your certifier?
I'm certified by IDALS, the Iowa Department mm-hmm. of Ag and Land Stewardship. Yeah. And there are several organizations to be certified through.
Good.
They really do come and check. My last inspection was three and a half hours long.
Oh, Lordy.
Looked at all the,
That is actually something that you talk about and other growers can talk about at farmers market and through your CSA too. People are getting more and more conversant and more and more insistent that their food is not have any overly amount of pesticides and other icky bits on it. So that's good.
Yeah, and fertilizers, of course, are a big issue in Iowa. So bravo to you for going through the organic certification. Go ahead.
Oh, I would be remiss if I didn't say that I had some small advantage in this because the piece of property that I grow vegetables on was indeed certified organic before I got here. So there were other people that put in hard work to get it there too. Elliot Thompson and Julia Slocum with Lacewing Acres worked really hard to make sure that that was certified before I was there. So I'm continuing on with the work that they did. But they really were the ones that certified it to begin with and put in the work to have that happen. Yeah.
Yeah, because we'll remind our listeners that a piece of ground has to be farmed for 3 years with no chemical inputs before it can even begin to be certified.
Yes.
There it is. Well, good for you. Good for you. Root and Rise Farm sounds good.
How many years has it been organic? Five? Six?
I believe it's seven.
Seven.
But I would have that. It's been quite a while, yeah. Yep.
Well, we talked last week because the Rodale Institute just published a 40-year study comparing, you know, soil and the harvest yield and all that data from a conventional systems compared to organic systems. And they did find that basically it takes about 5 years to change a piece of ground. From conventional ag, you have to build up the soil. You have to allow the microbes to regrow. It takes at least 5 years to get the soil back to really good tilth and in good shape for organic growing, which is a major investment for whoever is working that land. But once the land has gone through that conversion, it's 3 years required by law, but it also takes longer than that. So you have the benefit in your garden acreage of the people who have worked the soil that way before and probably are starting to get, I mean, one of the things they found, for example, is that organic, the soil holds more water, which in a drought year is a big deal. It has better tilth. It probably, they are working on even the Rodale plot showed it was all grains, basically. But there is a higher nutritional value in the grains grown on a organic ground. They are working on vegetable trials, which they only started in 2017. But, you know, the suspicion is that, you know, the nutrition, if it's in the soil, will go into the plant. So.
Good idea.
Yeah. So bravo for doing your certification. That's it's a lot of extra work just to do the paperwork. So
good. And speaking of challenges, where do you get your water from? Certainly you have to water some things. Do you have how do you keep all 5.5 acres growing in this weather?
Yeah, in a dry summer.
Well, it has been a challenge this year. You know, there's one well on the property, so Alluvial and Prairie Moon and myself, we all share water. There's a nice big pump, and the well, you know, has been so far, you know, deep enough to do all the things we need it to do. But there's really a lot of water that comes out of it. So my farm, because of that need to share, my farm has one hydrant. So essentially all of the wash and pack area, all of the irrigation, all of it is run off of one garden hose size spigot. Yeah. And that is a challenge. We do a lot of rotating irrigation. I spent a lot of money and time this spring investing in an irrigation system that was compartmentalized in a way where I could very effectively irrigate certain zones and, you know, switch back and forth from different zones efficiently. But we spend a lot of time switching. We switched when it's really dry. Most of this summer, we've had water running almost constantly and switching 3 to 4 times a day. So, you know, we switch when we get there in the morning, we switch later in the afternoon, and then oftentimes at bedtime, we come back out to the farm to switch to something else. And we give a lot of consideration to what we should be watering when and in what quantities. You know, we try to run overhead irrigation either overnight or first thing in the morning. In the afternoon, we run sections that are on drip irrigation because that's the most efficient way to use the water. But it is a struggle. It is a struggle. Yeah.
We're talking to Kate Sokol about Root to Rise Farm, and there's lots to talk about. We will be back after a little break here. You're listening to KHOI Community Radio. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. A little bit about the tune you just heard. This is turning into a tradition here on the Donna Lana Kitchen. That tune was called The First Tomato. The First Tomato, it's the first tomato polka. And when your first tomato comes out of the garden, if you don't want a polka, I don't know what. Right. It's good.
It's mood music for the first tomatoes.
It is. The first tomato. It was written by my friend Mike Bell when he lived here in Ames. He was part of the Barn Owl Band at the time. He is now working in sustainable ag issues at the University of Wisconsin, but he is still producing good music. And thanks to Mike for the first tomato polka. I think Ames is richer for it. We are here at the kitchen table with Kate Sokol talking about her farm. She has a wonderful place, and she provides good food for us all. You have a new addition to your farm this year. Talk about the hoop house greenhouse situation and what you're growing in there.
Yeah, we recently have been working in the last 2 weeks on completing a greenhouse. We previously have grown transplants in our basement, so we have a grow room set up with lights and things like that. And that work, it's pretty energy efficient in the really early spring, but it's pretty restrictive, as you can imagine, with space. Even with all the wire racks in the world, we can't fit as many tomato and pepper plants as we would like to. So this year, we are working on putting up a greenhouse as a step to the outside for our plants. We've been spending the last week covering it and building the end walls and things like that. It's been a little bit of a struggle to find all the time to do that on top of this busy time of year. But the other thing that it will provide for us is a place to dry down our onions. So our onions, I know Lana was saying that she has all of her onions harvested. I do not. But
there's time. There's time.
Yeah, we're finishing hopefully today with the end walls and the doors. And then Thursday we're slated to make the big bulk onion harvest. And we'll be laying those onions out in the greenhouse as a dry, warm place for them to cure for a week or two before we can, you know, trim them down and clean them up and put them in crates for storage. One of the things about our farm, you know, we share a lot of space with alluvial, with the brewery, we share a lot of water. We also, so with this space sharing, we don't have quite as much indoor storage as we would like to. Some people would dry onions in a barn. But we don't have access to a barn. All of our facilities are actually outdoors. And so the greenhouse will provide a really, really welcome extension to our farm and be able to give us a place covered, a little protected from the elements, a little warmer in some months to do some of those things that we need to do inside.
So the greenhouse is a season extender. It's not a heated greenhouse, right?
We have plans of heating on a very limited basis. We hope not to heat it. We are going to do some things to make it more energy efficient. We're going to be putting some of those big caged water tanks inside because water holds a lot of heat. So they heat up during the day and then stay warm at night. We're going to be putting in a second layer of plastic on the roof and inflating those two layers, which provides insulation. But as backup, occasionally we will have a propane heater so that, you know, just to maybe save this farmer a little bit of sleep on those nights where it's...
Oh, especially if you were planning on starting your seedlings out there. I mean, talk about, it's mother hen sort of time. Oh, dear, are they okay? It's good to have extra heat. It's good to, so do you grow all of your seedlings, or do you purchase some seeds and plants, or?
Yeah, I grow most of my transplants myself. I do outsource, or in the past, I should say, the greenhouse might change that. I have outsourced my onions, the quantity of onions that I put in the ground would take up a lot of table space. Onions also have to be started very early, which requires a heated greenhouse for sure. So I outsource those to G. It's Fresh up in the Decorah area. Glenn is really helpful with that. And then some of the perennial herb transplants as well, I get from a greenhouse in Missouri because I just don't have, I don't like to heat things here on the scale that I'm at for as long as those things need. And so about early, mid-March, I start growing the rest of my seedlings.
Yeah.
And at that point, I have the capacity to heat on that level. Yeah.
Good. Yes, that's something people should know, that not everything is just magic. Put a seed in and it'll grow. A lot of it has to do with our growing season here in Ames and even the day length. So I too get onion plants from elsewhere. I have grown onions into plants to plant out in my greenhouse. And yes, it takes forever and a day. And you kind of have to start that long about late January or February. And then again, you're fussing with those onions. It's nice to have people that really know how to do it and do it well. It's nice to have other places to get our crops. What are some of the varieties of onions that you grow?
There's some overlap with yours for sure. Recently this time of year, we've been eating Walla Walla and, our Sierra Blancas, which are a white onion, were ready. I don't know. They were a little small this year, but they flopped over and told us they were ready to be done a little early. So we've been eating those too. I have Patterson, which is a storage onion. And then Gold Coin is a Cipollini type that I grow. I really enjoy. And then Red Wing, I believe, is the red onion growing this year.
Yeah. I that's the last thing I harvested was my Red Wing and Red Mars. Sometimes I can't always get Red Mars, but they're just so pretty. They're big and they're red and they're shiny, and they tend to be a pretty good keeper. I like those, and Copras are a pretty good keeper, but it's really onions. I like onions because they are so. Onions are so attuned to the seasons, to the moon cycles, to they just are magic sort of things. I like dealing with onions, even though they're
How are
they're
they
addictive.
Attuned to the moon cycles?
Well, they just kind of know what's going on. They know when to sprout. They know when to start turning into bulbs as opposed to tops. They know those things. And you, as a farmer, all you can do is kind of, oh, Good for you, onions. I wouldn't know how to tell them, okay, now it's time. It's midsummer or I don't know. It depends. It's kind of mid-June, isn't it? Long about the summer solstice is when they kind of perk up and say, oh, now I'm going to put my energy into the bulbs. I don't know how they know that, but they know those things. So I do like dealing with onions. Very good. Very
well,
good.
Kate, you do some other unusual varieties. I love to see your stall at the farmer's market because of this. Like, for example, a few weeks ago, you had something I had never seen before. You had a purple Napa cabbage, which was a beautiful. It was like lavender and lacy, like Napa is, and it was delicious.
Yeah, the variety on that is Merlot, I believe. And I really love those. Now, I have to say, you know, they don't get as large and as dense as most of the green Napas. So I don't tend to use them for, like, say, making kimchi or something. But for shredding and putting on tacos or making salads out of, they are really tasty. And they are just one of the most beautiful things that I grow. I agree with that.
Is there going to be more of that this year, or are we done?
Unfortunately, we are done. One of the challenges I have is dealing with some. It's too far down a rabbit hole, but Brassica is the family that Napa cabbage belongs to. So any of your kale or cabbage, collard greens, those sorts of things are in that family. And I struggle with some specific Brassica diseases on my farm that don't really allow me to produce a fall crop once they're, you know, because they're kind of in the air and in the soil once that sort of that happens in the spring. And so I don't do fall Napas. I think there are other farmers in the area, though, that you might be able to find fall Napa cabbages from.
Well, I've never seen the lavender colored one, so I will look forward to it next year. Now, you also had some heirloom, collards, I think, and some other.
Yeah, I love those. So Old Timey Blue is the variety of that from Seed Savers in Decorah. And I have to say, you know, with that black rot, that brassica disease that I deal with, those were my last brassica standing last year. They were the most resistant to that disease as an heirloom. And that's unusual too. They're beautiful. They don't have that classic, or what we think of as the classic big round dinner plate size leaves. They have a little bit more ruffly edges, but the color is really beautiful, and there's lots of variation in the color from plant to plant. And I find that they're a little more tender than the other varieties.
I thought so. Like, I really like them. And I think, you know, how kale has had its moment for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, and now people know how to cook kale, and everybody loves it, and everybody knows it's so good for you, and we have kale chips and kale this and kale that. I think it's time to start on collards, because nutritionally they are, I think, very equivalent. They're another, you know, some of the cooking techniques are very similar. They are, of course, associated with the South, but we have plenty of it up here. And I want to give a push for eating more collards. They're good for you. Yeah. They're yummy.
Yeah, they are. And you can put collards in your smoothie, just like you put your kale in your smoothie. Yep. Collards are an excellent smoothie. And the other thing that I do with them, instead of a tortilla for a wrap, I'll take a nice big collard leaf and cut about half of the midrib out of it so that it's a little more flexible, you know, the biggest part.
Right.
And I'll smear hummus and put tomatoes or, you know, some cream cheese or something like that and make a wrap out of that instead of a tortilla and eat it raw. That's one of my kids' favorite lunches is a tuna salad on a collard green wrap.
Wow. I'm impressed with your child rearing techniques then, Kate. I mean, to get them to eat raw collards, so good for them. And what an adventure. Good for you.
Well, so you grow vegetables. Do your kids eat vegetables?
A lot of them. Yeah, a lot of them. I think it's... maybe it's luck, maybe it's all they've ever known. You know, I've got pictures of my 16-year-old when he was just a little baby toddling around on the first farm that I worked on. And it's just always been a part of their lives. We hold local, beautiful food. It is a really high priority in our family.
So. Fantastic.
I think that's been proven by the popularity of school gardens. It has helped. It seems to be the best way to introduce children to vegetables is for them to see it grow.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
They're so excited to pick, you know, to pick tomatoes. The other morning before market, my youngest, Ani, was with me, and she, you know, she was running around the farm while I was picking herbs, and I couldn't find her, and I was, you know, just for a minute. It wasn't a big deal, but I couldn't find her for a minute. We were ready to go, and she was in the tomatoes. She had found the ripe sun bulbs, and she had just camped herself down there.
Shoveling them in.
You know?
Good for her. I'm a big fan of doing some field canning, which is put it right into your mouth. You don't preserve it, just eat it. What a good idea. You are listening to KHOI, and this is Community Radio for the Heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Find out more at khoifm.org. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was another polka. Keep polkaing through your garden this summer. That was called Bill Sullivan's polka. We're talking about good things to eat. Let's continue with tomatoes and Donna, talk about some salsas and Kate, talk about your favorite tomatoes and recipes.
Well, salsa is just the Spanish word for sauce. So, you know, obviously there are millions and millions and millions of kind of salsas, and you can make your own up with whatever you have. The classic one that everybody's going to be wanting to make right now is, of course, you dice the tomatoes, you dice the onions, all of which you can just have completely fresh right now. It usually includes cilantro, salt, a chopped jalapeno, and lime. That's the classic when Americans think of salsa, fresh salsa, right? Which is what you want this time of year and anytime you can get it. This is one of my favorite things, and probably we talk about it every year. I like to make a peach salsa, and I like to do a funny thing where I take the peaches and I only use yellow tomatoes. So I do about half peaches and half tomatoes. And since they're both the same color, you know, with the lime, with the jalapeno, with the cilantro, you know, I just sub in a little peach and use all yellow. Then you have a peach and tomato salsa, and it's really fun because people think they're eating a tomato salsa, and then they hit it. There's that peach flavor. It's really, really a lovely little, it's one of my culinary jokes. The other thing, Kate, I noticed, I think you're going to have a lot of tomatillas this year, right?
It looks like it,
yes. Good tomatilla year.
Yeah, it looks to be a very good tomatillo year. You know, they like the heat.
And the dry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
just so many blooms and fruit already on plants. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, it will be a good tomatillo season. We'll probably start seeing them at the market. So a tomatillo salsa. Now with tomatillas, you have to cook them. So I usually just you know, you got to take the paper off of them. I mean, the paper husk. It's a papery husk. And I just, depending on the size, either quarter or if they're, you know, smaller, you can cut them in half. Spray a baking sheet with a little olive oil and put the tomatillos on there. You can also chop in the onion and roast them at the same time as the tomatillos. And then you get this kind of, they juice out and get kind of thick and you make a little slurry. And that is wonderful to make into a salsa, or you can just freeze it like that. But you can steam them and stew them, but I really like to roast them. It concentrates the flavor and makes a wonderful salsa with the tomatillos.
Kate.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Usually what I do with my tomatillos is, no, I do stew them. But so I take the tomatillos, and a lot of times I don't even cut them because I'm just trying to do something to preserve something quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I put them all hot, and then I put, you know, a few onion halves and a few jalapenos and just enough water so that they don't burn on the bottom, you know, maybe like an inch or two, depending on the size of your pot. And I stew them down, and then I just take all of that and blend it. And then I actually freeze that in quart size containers, and I use that for enchiladas during the winter.
Oh, yum. Yeah, you get a green salsa with tomatillos. And you know, you can do the same thing with roasting, is roast and freeze too. It's just another preservation technique. So,
yeah, it brings out the sugars.
I also noticed that you're going to have a lot of peppers. Looks like we're going to have a good pepper season. It's just, you start to see them at the market now. Not the big red bells yet, or even the lipstick peppers, but they're coming, right?
Yeah, I have a lot of big green peppers on the plants right now. I tend to not pick too many green peppers. I'll give the CSA a couple. I'll take a couple to market. But I think peppers really shine when they ripen up. So
absolutely,
you'll probably see peppers on my table in a week or two. Some of them are starting to color up. Yeah, it looks to be like it's going to be quite a good pepper year.
Well, I think it's a shame to pick them when they're green, because basically green bells are unripe peppers.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, get out. It's like eating a green apple, but not quite,
I mean, there
so
are,
fun.
There are green peppers, like the little banana peppers, kind of a yellowish green. And then you have shishitos too, right?
I do, yeah. Shishitos are a farmer's market favorite. People love those at farmer's market. And, you know, if people aren't familiar with them, they're kind of a barely hot, wrinkly-looking green pepper.
Yeah, about the size of a larger jalapeno, but as thick-skinned.
Yeah.
You got to cook them quick and hot. Like, they're great on the grill. If you overcook them and don't cook them quickly enough, they kind of come out, yeah, because they are very thin fleshed.
Yeah, or blistering them in a cast iron skillet. I like to do that too.
Yeah.
Quick and hot. Right?
Yeah, or even throw them on the open flame of your, you know, of your gas kit. I mean, you got to use tongs and catch them quick, but you can do that.
and shishitos, they're supposed to be green when you pick them, or do they turn into a color?
Well, they will ripen red, but, you know, they're like probably the only peppers that I don't think improve, personally, for my taste, red. When they get red, I feel like they're a little more leathery.
Yeah, they start to dry. I've never seen them marketed red, even. You know, they're best kind of, and plumpest when they first get to full size.
Oh,
yeah.
You have so many food adventures out at your farm. You are experimenting, or I don't know, have you been doing this for a while? Ginger. Talk about ginger.
We are experimenting with ginger. It's new this year. There's a Ames native Purdue student who is doing some work independently on my farm, growing, working on his own small operation. And he wanted to grow ginger, and so I said that I would help with that. And ginger is a very, very long season crop, and
it's,
if you can
tropical.
Imagine, that's hard here in Iowa. So we started it on heat mats the 1st of March. It was on heat mats till June when it can go out in the ground. Then we have it in small tunnels to increase the heat. Yeah, and it's a slow grower, but we're really hopeful that we'll get some tasty baby ginger in the fall.
Good.
Market at the farmer's market. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Baby ginger is it's a real treat. It's called baby ginger because it's harvested while it still has like a thin skin and not that leathery kind of brownness that you get on most ginger that you find. And it's usually quite juicy. It doesn't have quite as much heat in it as older ginger does. So I'm looking forward to it. Maybe we can candy some of it or something,
ooh,
Kate.
Ooh,
that sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Good. We've been talking to Kate Solko from Root to Rise Farm, a person that grows good food here in central Iowa. Tell us how people can contact you, Kate. How can they find you?
That's a good question. I'm notoriously bad at email, is why I chuckle. So that's maybe, you're welcome to email me. It's just roottorisefarmer@gmail.com, which is, you know, I'd be happy to take emails, but I don't check it as often as I should. I'm at the farmer's market every Saturday. I welcome people to stop out and chat with me at the farm just behind Alluvial. If you're on the patio at Alluvial and you look north, that's all our farm. As well as I have a Instagram and Facebook page as well that I respond to.
Oh, well, thanks for being with us today, and thanks for sharing what you know. Very good. Thank you, Kate.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Good. Well, we learned a lot about what's growing out there this time of year. Before we go, I would like to, offer a little tidbit of something to bang around in your head. From the Superior Person's Book of Words, this is the obscure word of the week, and this is a summer connection. Shandy, you've heard of shandies. Shandies is a drink, but here's something I did not know. Shandy gaff, G-A-F-F, shandy gaff, the full and proper name for what most people call a shandy. In the future, never use the abbreviated version, always the full. Know, too, that a shandy gaff is properly not beer and lemonade, but beer and ginger beer. A young lady should always insist on proprieties in observing these matters. So there you
go. Well, we used to make them with ginger ale and beer.
That'd do it.
But ginger beer and beer sounds even better.
Yeah, it's a real summery sort of thing. So, I mean, since we were talking about
you want a lighter beer. You don't want a real bitter beer.
Yeah, since we're talking about Root to Rise Farm, which is right next door and is part of the Alluvial Brewing Company just north of Ames. I think that is a really good marriage of
Kate,
skills.
Maybe they'll make some ginger beer with your ginger in the fall.
Yeah.
You have to get on Elliot about that one.
Good idea. Yeah. Good idea. Very good.
That's a great idea.
I like that. Oh, all kinds of. Normally, I just like beer. Don't put any stuff in it. But a shandy, or should I say, a shandy gaff.
A shandy gaff, yes.
All right, is important there. That's good. So it's always nice to learn new things. We learned about CSAs and farmers markets and Root to Rise Farm and brassicas and all the challenges and pleasures of growing vegetables for the Ames market. Yes. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find the Donna Lana Kitchen Tuesdays at noon and 7 p.m. on this fine radio station, KHOI FM 89.1 FM, yes. Or go to www.khoifm.org and find us anytime. You can go and find past shows and just find out more than you ever want to know about the Donna Lana Kitchen. There's recipes on our page and whatever, but we had music by the Barn Owl Band, another Ames creation here, and we heard the first tomato, you heard Bill Sullivan's Jill Sullivan's, and those are both polkas. And we'll go out with a tune called The Single Foot and Horse. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Get engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.